Welcome to Business English. Bienvenue à notre émission consacrée à l'anglais commercial aux États-Unis. Dans ce programme, vous participerez à des voyages d'affaires, à des conversations téléphoniques, à l'échange de messages e-mail et à des interviews. Au micro, Michel Joseph. Deux questions d'étiquette dans le milieu des affaires. Première question, les Américains dans les milieux d'affaires utilisent-ils leur prénom ou leur nom de famille?
Do Americans usually use their first name or last name in business?
First name, c'est le prénom. My first name is Michelle. Last name, nom de famille. My last name is Joseph. What is your first name? Quel est votre prénom? À vous de me répondre. What is your first name? What is your last name? Quel est votre nom de famille? Répondez-moi. What is your last name? Comme vous allez entendre, pour Gary, c'est une question difficile.
This is a difficult question. To be safe, use the name that the other person gives you.
This is a difficult question. C'est une question difficile. To be safe, use the name that the other person gives you. Pour être sûr de ne pas faire une gaffe, to be safe, donnez-lui le nom qu'il ou elle se donne, le prénom ou le nom de famille. Gary dit, quand il se présente, Please, call me Gary. Veuillez m'appeler Gary. Please, call me Gary. C'est ainsi que vous donnez la permission à l'autre personne de vous appeler d'une certaine façon. Écoutons la conversation qui suit à propos de la première question.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Our listeners have sent in some email questions, Gary. Our first question is, do Americans usually use their first name or last name in business?
Well, this is a difficult question. To be safe, use the name that the other person gives you. I always say, please call me Gary.
Gary dit, I always say, je dis toujours, always. I always say, please call me Gary. Littéralement, s'il vous plaît, s'il te plaît, appelle-moi Gary. Appelle-moi Gary. Please call me Miss Joseph. Please call me Mrs. Joseph. Ce qui nous amène à la prochaine question d'étiquette. Elizabeth demande à Gary, When speaking with women in business, quand on parle à des femmes dans un contexte d'affaires ou professionnel,
When speaking with women in business, when should we use Miss, Mrs. or Ms?
When should we use, quand doit-on se servir de? When should we use Miss, Mrs. or Ms? Miss, mademoiselle, ou comme le dit Gary, For single women, pour les femmes célibataires. Single women. Les femmes célibataires, miss. Ou bien, Mrs., madame. For married women, pour les femmes mariées. For married women.
Well, miss is for single women. Mrs. is for married women.
Ou encore, Ms. Un mot nouveau qui est neutre et n'implique pas le statut de célibataire ou de marié à la femme en question.
Ms. is easier to use than Mrs. or Miss because you don't have to know whether or not a woman is married.
Écoutez la conversation qui suit.
Our next question is, when speaking with women in business, when should we use Miss, Mrs. or Ms?
Well, Miss is for single women. Mrs. is for married women. Ms. is easier to use than Mrs. or Miss because you don't have to know whether or not a woman is married. I always use Ms. because with Ms. I usually don't offend people.
What do most American women in business prefer?
I believe that most American women prefer Ms.
Thank you, Gary.
Finissez la phrase. Vous allez entendre le début et vous devez terminer la phrase. Écoutez et finissez la phrase.
Some people use their first name in business, but others prefer to use their last name.
Le nom de famille.
They prefer to use their last name.
Le nom de famille.
Most American women prefer to be addressed as Ms. They prefer to be addressed as Ms.
Ms, c'est neutre.
In the past, people used to address all married women as Mrs.
Et c'est tout pour cette leçon de Business English, l'anglais commercial. That's it for today. Until next time, à la prochaine fois. English USA vous présente African Voices in Conversation, des conversations en anglais qui ont attrait à la vie quotidienne au Sénégal. Obtenir un prêt bancaire n'est pas toujours chose aisée. Cependant, parfois, à force de persuasion, on peut quand même obtenir un petit prêt. La preuve ? Écoutons cette cliente inhabituelle en face du directeur général de cette banque. Nous allons écouter la conversation. Vous répondrez par vrai ou faux, true ou false, à ces énoncés. 1. Pour le directeur général, c'est facile d'avoir un prêt. 2. La dame veut un microcrédit. Vous allez ensuite répondre à ces trois questions. 1. Pourquoi la dame veut-elle un prêt bancaire? 2. Qu'est-ce qu'il est arrivé à sa pièce d'identité? 3. Va-t-elle signer le papier de reconnaissance de dette? Vous allez enfin apprendre des termes relatifs à la banque et réviser comment poser des questions en anglais avec des mots qui commencent par WH.
Have a seat, madam. My assistant told me you insisted on meeting me. What can I do for you?
Sir, I want a loan.
That's no problem. But why did you need to see me? All you need to do is to see the account manager and she'll give you an application for a loan.
That's the problem. I can't read or write. I need a loan to start my business.
All right. Where's your ID?
I lost it in a car rapide, but I have my birth certificate here in my purse.
Have you got an electricity bill or water bill in your purse too?
No. Water and electricity are included in my rent.
A bank needs a security before it can grant a loan. Who can stand as guarantor for you?
Gara what?
Who will refund the loan if you don't pay?
You, sir. I'm sure you can be my guarantor. I heard you on the radio saying that banks should support women in business and grant them loans.
Oh, yes. What kind of business do you want to start?
Selling Bissap juice.
But before you start a business, you must do a market study.
I did. The bus stop has Cafe Touba and Ataya, but no Bissap juice.
Ah, I can see that the bank needs to grant you a loan to encourage you. Now, can you sign this paper for me? It's an IOU.
Manager, sir, I told you that I can't write. How can I sign? You can just trust me. Inshallah, I will repay.
Nous avons entendu la cliente et le directeur général de la banque. L'énoncé 1 est vrai. Pour le directeur général, c'est facile d'avoir un prêt. L'énoncé 2 est faux. La dame veut un microcrédit. Voilà les réponses aux questions. 1. Pourquoi la dame veut-elle un prêt bancaire? Pour commencer son propre commerce. 2. Qu'est-il arrivé à sa pièce d'identité? Elle l'a perdu. 3. Va-t-elle signer le papier de reconnaissance de dette? Non. Vous allez maintenant répéter ces mots en relation avec la banque. Vous voulez un prêt? Alors, retenez-les bien. Écoutez et répétez. Un prêt bancaire. A loan. Un formulaire de prêt. Loan application. Accorder un prêt. To grant a loan. Une garantie bancaire. A banking security. Un garant. A guarantor. Rembourser. To repay. Une reconnaissance de dette. An IOU. Nous allons écouter maintenant ces questions du directeur général de la banque pour réviser comment poser des WH questions, des mots qui commencent par WH, en anglais. Écoutez et retenez.
What can I do for you? Why did you need to see me? Where's your ID? Who will refund the loan if you don't pay?
Vous avez entendu cette cliente et ce directeur général de banque. Vous avez appris les mots relatifs à la banque et révisé comment poser des WH questions en anglais. Et vous avez pu remarquer que parfois, la persuasion paie même pour avoir un prêt bancaire. Pour plus de renseignements au sujet des cours d'anglais, Learning English, allez au site internet suivant à americanenglish.state.gov ou à voalearningenglish.com. Ce soir, Martin est allé à l'hôpital pour observer ce qui se passe dans une salle d'urgence. Tonight, Martin went to a hospital emergency room. Au cours de cette leçon, vous apprendrez à faire la comparaison entre différentes actions. Au cours de cette leçon, vous allez apprendre à comparer plusieurs actions différentes dans le passé ou dans le présent. Martin se trouve à l'hôpital. Martin is at the hospital. Il pose des questions à l'infirmière en charge. Écoutons la conversation entre Martin et l'infirmière. Let's listen to the conversation between Martin and the nurse.
Let me call the kitchen.
Tell me what you would like to know and see, Mr. Lerner.
Call me Martin.
I'm Carol.
Tell me what you do here in the emergency room, Carol.
I'm the night supervisor of the nursing staff.
Are you in charge of the emergency room then?
In a way. I don't supervise the doctors, of course.
Is there a doctor here at all times?
We have one doctor at night during the week. Two are available on the weekends. We can call other doctors as we need them.
Do you have more emergencies on the weekend?
Oh, yes, especially Friday and Saturday nights.
Why is that?
Many of the problems are related to alcohol. People drink too much. They think they are having a good time, but they have bad judgment. They have all kinds of accidents. They hurt themselves, and they hurt their friends.
I'm happy I came on Wednesday, not on the weekend.
I wouldn't have time to talk to you on the weekend. We are too busy then. We aren't now. Let's go into this room.
What's happening?
This boy came in a few minutes ago. The nurses have been very busy for several minutes now.
What happened?
This is the boy's father. Ask him.
I'm Martin Lerner. What happened to your son?
He fell through a window. He was playing. I was reading while he was playing. Suddenly, I heard this crash. I looked up, and there was glass everywhere. He'd run through the window.
Was his mother there?
No, she was shopping while I was watching the children.
He's going to be okay. Don't worry. He looks worse than he is.
There's so much blood.
No, he's going to be all right. The doctor has looked at him. The cuts aren't serious.
Who are you? Are you a doctor?
No, I'm a reporter.
He was playing quietly. Then he was running, and there was all this noise.
What's the most important thing you do?
The most important thing I do is stay calm.
Nous pouvons comparer nos actions dans des périodes différentes en utilisant des mots descriptifs. Par exemple, we are too busy then. Nous sommes trop occupés à cet instant-là. We aren't busy now. Nous ne sommes pas occupés en ce moment. Donc, c'est dans le présent, dans le passé. Écoutez les exemples.
We are too busy then. We aren't busy now. He looks worse than he is. They are calm when they get here. Then they become excited. Sometimes they get angry.
Nous pouvons comparer nos propres actions dans des périodes différentes. On peut comparer ce que l'on a fait, par exemple, au début de la journée avec ce que l'on a fait pendant l'après-midi. Par exemple, what did you do this morning? Qu'est-ce que vous avez fait ce matin? What did you do this afternoon? Qu'est-ce que vous avez fait cet après-midi? Essayez maintenant de répondre aux questions de Martin Lerner.
What did you do this morning? What did you do this afternoon? What did you do last week? What did you do this week?
It sounds like another emergency coming in.
Essayons de comprendre un tout petit peu cette leçon. Nous parlons de situations où on compare une situation au présent avec une situation dans le passé. Par exemple, Martin Lerner demande à l'infirmière, « Do you have more emergencies on the weekend? » Est-ce que vous avez plus de cas d'urgence le week-end? « Do you have more emergencies on the weekend? » Le mot comparatif est « more ». Est-ce que vous avez plus de cas d'urgence le week-end? L'infirmière dit que bien sûr, et elle continue de dire que « I wouldn't have time » to talk to you on the weekend. Je n'aurai même pas le temps de vous parler le week-end. Comme on parle en ce moment, sous-entendu. I wouldn't have time to talk to you on the weekend. We are too busy then. Nous sommes trop occupés en ce moment-là. We are too busy then. We aren't busy now. Nous ne sommes pas occupés en ce moment. We aren't busy now. Nous ne le sommes pas en ce moment. We are too busy then. We aren't busy now. Une situation où il y a une action qui se déroule en même temps qu'une autre action. Par exemple, I was reading while he was playing the piano. J'étais en train de lire pendant qu'il jouait au piano. I was reading while he was playing the piano. While, pendant. Ou durant, while. Ça s'écrit W-H-I-L-E, while. Essayez plusieurs exemples. Prenons un exemple simple. I was eating while he was talking. Je mangeais pendant qu'il parlait. Revenons au contexte de cette leçon. Un père qui décrit ce qui s'est passé à son enfant dit « He was playing quietly. » Il jouait tranquillement. « Then, he was running. » Ensuite, il courait. Et ensuite, l'accident s'est passé. Ou bien, « When their children are sick or have accidents, » quand les enfants sont malades ou ont des accidents, « Parents try to stay calm. » Les parents essaient de rester calmes. « When their children are sick or have accidents, parents try to stay calm. » « When » exprime le moment. Le moment où l'action se déroule. Vous savez maintenant comparer des actions différentes. Lorsque vous parlez avec un ami, vous pourrez discuter et comparer ce que vous avez fait pendant la semaine. J'espère que votre semaine n'était pas trop chargée et que vous aviez eu le temps d'écouter et de pratiquer votre anglais. Until next time, practice hard. Hello and welcome back to Anglais Télé. Bienvenue à Anglais Télé. My name is Michelle Joseph. You can find us on Facebook, Anglais Télé. I have a guest with me.
Je m'appelle Daniel. Bienvenue, Michelle, aussi.
Bienvenue, Daniel. Welcome to Anglais Télé. We're very happy to have you. We are looking at suffixes and prefixes. Prefixes first. So,
right.
These are the little letters that go before a word to change the meaning or after a word in the case of suffix.
Right.
To change the meaning. So we had arrived at un. U-N, it's actually the letters U-N in front of a word, like unnatural.
Unused.
Unused. Unprepared.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. You're in school and your teacher gives you a quick test.
Ooh.
And you're not ready for it. You're unprepared.
Absolutely. Right? And sometimes...
And the teacher won't like that and she'll give you a bad grade.
Oh, absolutely. So unprepared, that was a good one, right. Daniel. How about unconvincing?
How about unconventional?
Right. Well, let me go with unconvincing say, Daniel, I'm really scared of the little cat in the corner. Am I convincing?
No.
I am not convincing.
No.
So I am unconvincing.
Now, if you want to say that, you say, oh, the cat in the corner tried to scratch me and meowed at me and hissed at me and then I'd believe you.
Yeah, that was convincing.
Yeah.
So unconvincing is the opposite. So un is kind of the opposite of it's not. It means it's not.
Right.
Whatever it is. Are you a natural on the air, Daniel?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he is.
I'm not.
Right.
I'm not unnatural.
He's not unnatural. He is natural. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So there, we've understood the un, which means not. Okay. How about to re? To re means again. Re is like again, like repetition. Re.
Well, so, revisit.
To revisit. Oh, yeah, I love revisiting.
It means look at something again.
Yeah, or to go visit a place again, something that we love, the place we love too. Or what about re-entering a room? Like, you've entered it once, you've exited, and you re-enter. Yeah?
Right, you re-enter. Or a scientist might say, I've got this frog here, and I'm going to reanimate this frog.
Ooh, how's he going to do that?
She's going to put some electricity in the frog,
Ooh.
And the frog's going to... And frog wasn't dead anyway.
Okay, yeah, yeah, that's the secret. Now, yeah. Dan's example was to reanimate. So basically anything with re is bringing it back.
Something back, yeah.
Or going again into something. So a return of sorts. Okay, so how about a in front of word or an? So like Amoral. Oh, that was immoral. Amoral. Something that happened and it really was wrong. It was not good. So it didn't have something in it that it should have had. So amoral is a good one. Something's amoral.
Yeah.
Or do you say amoral or immoral?
Immoral.
It's not very common.
It's not used a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Or asocial. You know, someone who really does not like social situations.
He's
asocial.
That person doesn't like being around people.
Right. So
doesn't like doing anything with people.
Right. And it's interesting that is a negative. You can't say anormal.
No.
In French, you can. Anormal, c'est anormal, actually. But in English, they'll say ab, which means it's away from, it's also distinct from. So,
well, like abstain, where you put yourself away from doing something that you want not to do, or somebody doesn't want you to do,
right,
or wants you to do.
So you abstain.
You say, abstain from that.
Or to abduct someone, abduct, you're taking that person and moving them to another place. Like
in Congress, they abstain all the time. When our Congress in this country votes for a law, there's a yay note, a vote, and a nay vote, yes and no. And then there's a lot of senators or congressmen who will say, I'm abstaining from that vote.
Right.
It means I don't want any part of it. I'm not going to vote for anything, yes or no.
Right.
And that's to abstain.
So ab, when you're adding ab, the suffix ab, you're staying away from that particular
issue. Absolutely away.
Absolutely away.
Yeah, away.
Ooh, now instead of that, we're coming into centro. Centro. Around. Actually, I don't have that many examples with that.
Centrifugal.
Yeah, but concentric.
Yeah.
Centrifugal, which is kind of a medical term when you're, you know, mixing blood and things like that. Right?
Yeah, right?
We don't know much about this thing, so we're going to kind of...
But it's centrifugal force.
Right, or centro...
Centrifugal force, and when the astronauts rehearse for going into space, they put them in this big circular thing. And it goes around very, very fast like that, and it makes centrifugal force,
okay,
which is from gravity pushing them out at a certain pressure toward a certain number of G-forces, which is one or two or three or four or five times their body weight, pushing out on this capsule. And, you know, their face goes down like this. But that's centrifugal force.
Absolutely. Okay. Now to... So we're going to move from that centro, which is basically centric, the center.
Right.
And we're going to go to dis, which means to go apart. So to disengage, you know, just like I think the troops in certain countries, the U.S. troops are disengaging in Afghanistan.
Right. They're coming home.
They're breaking apart. They're moving away from, yeah. So, or for example, if a lady is engaged to a gentleman and they break that engagement, they don't say, I'm disengaged.
They don't say disengaged, no.
I'm disengaged.
They say, I'm not engaged
I'm
anymore.
No longer
engaged.
But basically to part, or let's say discomfort, that's another one, discomfort.
Well, being unengaged might cause discomfort, too.
Yes, right.
Right.
You hear Dan with his puns, that's quite
right.
Good. So,
okay.
Disengagement,
yeah.
Discomfort, so discord if people don't get along, that's discord.
And another reason they probably aren't engaged anymore is because there was discord
right.
In the relationship.
Actually, it all links, doesn't
fighting.
It?
Yeah, they were fighting in the relationship. They got unengaged because that caused them a lot of discomfort.
Absolutely. And they had a lot of discord also.
Right.
Okay, so this, and we've all understood this.
Right.
Okay, so let's end with that one, and we'll see you shortly for another little lesson on suffixes.